From Akron, Ohio, this is episode 233 of On the Tropes. On this spooky episode of On the Tropes, we are talking about curses to go with our candy and curses Halloween theme. And then we'll talk about our top five curses, and maybe we'll put a curse on you. No, we wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
I'm clearly trying to stall because the person in the bottom left-hand corner has stepped away. So I'll introduce, I am your host, Nightmare Nick, and I'm joined by Spooky
Sir
and Creepy
Kyle
and Evil.
I was here for a while. I just wanted to say.
There we go.
The worst name of the worst.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, much like John Ducker, I'm like, gee, nobody's ever called me that before. I'm like, that's a good one.
Is that really a thing?
Like John Ducker's nickname.
Like, yeah, that's a thing.
Well, I mean, my daughter's name is very similar to yours, but she's also like too young for people to come up with cruel nicknames. So.
Well, it's coming. Don't worry.
It's coming. All right, that's fine. She'll probably like lean into it. I don't know if you did.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Evelyn.
Yeah, yeah. She's that actually makes sense. So we've been talking about candy and curses. We already touched base on our favorite candies. Now let's go to the dark side of Halloween. We're talking curses. What do you guys feel about curses? Do you think they're real?
I was thinking about this with the unfortunate news about Alec Baldwin.
Oh yeah.
Incident. Then it reminded me of the Bruce Lee curse, the Bruce Lee family curse.
Is there a Baldwin curse?
And I don't know if there's a Baldwin curse.
No, yet. They're all still alive.
No, just that Steven is one of them.
Yeah, Brandon Lee was killed in similar circumstances. And yeah, attributed to a curse. There was the Cleveland curse that we had.
Sports curse?
Sports curse. Sports curses feel real.
I was gonna say so I don't believe in
there's
curses.
One on my list,
sports curses are for sure real. Have you ever seen The Game of Death or Game of Death?
Yeah. I mean, well, we've seen the as much as we can see.
Yeah, that's a wild movie because for people who don't know, it was going to be a Bruce Lee film, and it sort of is a Bruce Lee film. Still, he died during production. It's the one where he fights Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And he died during the making of it. And then they sort of just like remade it around him. And part of it is, I think it's this movie where his character is killed because somebody puts a real bullet in a gun. It was supposed to be a blank, which is wild because this was in 1972. And it's how his son died for real 20 years later.
Yeah.
Very strange. It's I would say it's not a good movie. Like objectively, it's not a good movie.
It's
really fascinating. It's a fascinating document of like, this is what happens when an international superstar dies as his stardom is peaking. And what people try to do to basically do a cynical cash grab on it. I think it's worth watching.
Yeah. And as like, if you like fight choreography, there's some interesting stuff in it. Like Bruce had this project was his most fully realized. Like he had real martial artists from other disciplines that were coming. I mean, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is in it. One of his students, which is a great like time capsule thing too, just the culture of the time.
There's a recut of it called, I think it's just called Redux or Game of Death Redux, which is they only include his fight scenes in it. And it's shorter, but you know, it's just Bruce Lee. He's got that bright yellow suit that Tarantino used for the bride's outfit in Kill Bill Part 1. I think it's a mess, not really their fault that it was a mess. Like, what are you going to do when your star dies? But I do think it's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah. I mean, curses are like one of the oldest things in like human cultural relations. Some of the like oldest amulets or jewelry pieces we have or things like that are people warding off curses. Like, there's like, you know, in the Middle East, right after Christianity came up, there used to be a little like a thing where you would carry around Christ's name to ward off the evil eye and stuff. Like, it's just everywhere that's been a major concern. And especially just like the idea of just cursing someone with bad intention and just, hey, something bad's gonna happen to you. I mean, a modern example, I'm almost kind of sheepish bringing up a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode yet. You remember when Colbert's on there?
No, I haven't seen
it. He comes up and asks Larry to take a picture of him, and of course it turns him and his wife, they're touring New York, and it turns into a disaster. And Larry's about to be in the producers, and Colbert just like looks at him and points at him and is just like, "You will fail." And he like does like the curse fingers. And yeah, of course it happens. And yeah, just that whole thing of people just like giving someone the evil eye or just trying to put a bad intention on someone. It goes way, way back.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a great trope to use in horror movies because it's got that kind of fatalism where, I don't know if this would really count as a curse movie, but sort of taking that idea to the extreme is Final Destination, where like you just can't escape the shit that's coming for you.
Even if you thought you did.
Yeah, yeah. Even if you thought you did, like no matter what you do, you can't reason or rationalize with it. You're just boned. Yeah. And I think that's really effective for horror movie storytelling.
And as a viewer, it's fascinating to watch because you're just like, how do you overcome a curse, really? Mm-hmm. Like, it's so final.
Yeah.
Do any of your guys' examples, or do all of your guys' examples involve someone actually cursing somebody, or is it more just someone who is cursed? Like, it's not like a gypsy. Is there a gypsy in all of your guys' stories that puts a curse on everybody, or is it?
No, I thought about putting,
like, would you consider something like Groundhog Day, like, where he's just like, his life is cursed, kind of, in a way, where it's like,
I think it fits. Yeah, it's all over the place for me. Like,
because I have a loop example in mind, but yeah, I don't think any of mine straight up involves someone like, I don't know, doing something and then them being actively cursed in the story, but I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know that. Well, we'll get to it. Should we jump into our list?
We can.
Kyle, what's your number five?
I'm just getting this one taken care of immediately, and it's just our religion episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask if we're getting too close.
Whenever we talk about religion, how many times have we tried to do it? At least twice, right?
I feel like it's been like three times.
But it wasn't this podcast. Well, it was it was the old podcast, right? It wasn't this one.
It was like two versions of the religion episode on the old podcast, and there was something else on this podcast that we...
Was it the witch?
Oh, it was the witch, yeah.
Did the witch get you?
Yeah, the witch got us.
Yeah. Those episodes are cursed.
And then sure. I think also the Paul Schrader one, which wasn't specifically about religion, but I know we talked about Last Temptation of Christ. Yeah. And that one was gone. Yeah.
Yeah, we talked a lot about religion in that one.
Yeah. So anyways, people will never hear this.
Yeah, people are like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You guys had religion episodes?
Legit. Yeah, it's real.
Eva would be your number five.
My number five is kind of a little bit of a stretch because it was never explicitly said it was a curse. However, in that a character like comes into contact with an evil character and then becomes evil herself. And that is a pro wrestler named Luna Vachon, who for kids our age, Luna was like a valet mostly in WWF in the early mid 90s. She had a like big curly mohawk, leather gear. But before she became Luna, she was a character named Trudy. I forget what her last name was. And she was just like a reporter, broadcaster kind of looking lady. And she was involved in she got in the middle of like a scuffle with this faction that was led by Kevin Sullivan that was evil. And it was like, not like super like cloaks and like pagan looking evil. It was more like Manson family kind of, where they were just like,
yeah,
all random, but dangerous looking.
The 80s satanic panic, right, kind of skulls and knives and stuff.
Right. But no robes or anything, like no coordinated costume. So Kevin Sullivan slaps her and she hits the floor. And when she stands up, she's like dazed. And after that, she joins his cult and shaves half of her head because she sacrificed her beautiful appearance to be part of his cult. And that's when she turns into Luna Vachon, where she stayed.
Just some of the best makeup of it.
Yeah. And I mean, basically the Ultimate Warrior's entire, anything the Ultimate Warrior ever said out loud, he was ripping off Luna Vachon.
How did she die? She was only 48.
I think it was an overdose. Yeah, she had a hard life and she didn't get really promoted in the business the way other people did.
We just had the listeners, if you have Vice TV, they just had a Dark Side of the Ring episode. Was that last week?
It was last, you know, it was the week before, I think. But yeah, really interesting. She really was a good wrestler. And it's like the position that she has, where she didn't, at first she couldn't get the same kind of treatment the other women were because she wasn't seen as being as pretty as they were. And then she didn't want to play along with it anyway. Anyhow, sir, what's your number five?
Let's see. I'm going to just start with, I'm going to get my terrible curse out of the way. Speaking of real life curses, Anderson Silva, who, you know, arguably greatest MMA fighter of all time. Since, you know, there's always a debate. So back in 2013, it was pretty much the facts. He's a middleweight champion, 185 pounds. And at UFC, Chris Weidman, and the outcome was a fluky KO where a lot of people were like, all right, maybe they need a rematch because it was kind of a flash knockout. The rematch, 168, Anderson Silva comes out second round, kicks Chris Weidman, and has a shin break. And Nick, you probably have seen, you probably know how bad this is. Yet anyone who's seen a live like leg break, sometimes it doesn't look like a leg break. If it's a shin break, it always looks like a leg break. Yeah. And I've been unfortunate enough to have seen, I think three of them live. And basically, yeah, like your leg kick just snaps the other way.
I was going to say, did he kick himself in the knee?
He kicked the other guy's shin, and the way that Weidman checked it, himself.
Like, yeah, after he was done, did his foot flop back,
kick himself?
Exactly.
Jesus.
And it results in a rubbery, awful-looking, just horrifying leg break.
Yeah, so, I remember...
So greatest of all time.
It happens a few times in basketball in the last...
Yeah, what's the guy on the Celtics a couple years ago, or maybe 4 years ago, Gordon Hayward. Yeah. I remember watching, it was season opener against the Cavs maybe 3 years ago, and he went up for a jump and landed funny, came down, and everyone stopped. They didn't show it very well on the like live monitor, but the
there were angles.
Yeah, all the players are around him, and the announcers are going, "Oh, Gordon Hayward broke his ankle," and I'm like, "What? You don't know that? Like, shut up! You're not a doctor. You haven't seen like, you can't diagnose.
We can't diagnose a broken ankle."
And then
yeah,
and then it showed him, and it showed it again, and I was like, "Oh yeah, no, they're right."
Yeah.
Like once you actually see it, like he very clearly broke his ankle, and you know that he broke it in not just a straightforward, like it's broken in lots of places and things are dislocated and going every which way. So yeah, that's not good. That's not what you want.
Well, it's not, this person just getting started. So at phase one. So
the shin break is terrible. It's horrific. It ends the legends. It sidetracks the Legends career. Kind of that's the last time Anderson Solo was super competitive. And so that's 2013. In the meantime, another fighter named Uriah Hall comes around. Similar style. People are like, oh, he's the next Anderson Silva. Kind of works out, kind of doesn't. Anderson Silva's retirement fight, October 31st, 2020. He fights Uriah Hall, loses the fight. And I think it's the only time it's one of the only other times, I think the only time he was like finished. Basically has the fight, everything goes well, he leaves the UFC, last MMA fight. UFC 261. Notice 162 when this whole thing started, 261. Uriah Hall, who has fought Anderson Silva and retired him, fights Chris Weidman, who Anderson Silva broke the leg on 2013. 17 seconds into the fight, Chris Weidman throws a kick at Uriah Hall. Uriah Hall checks it. Chris Weidman breaks his leg. Shin breaks, same place.
And with Weidman, like you saw the kick happen, and then when he tries to step down again.
Steps down and
his foot is not connected anymore. It was horrifying.
And I mean, I'm like, I'm an atheist and not really like, you know, the curses, but you can always kind of talk your way out of it. Like, it doesn't really have, there's no connection. Okay. I mean, come on. 162, 261, the mantle passing. This is a real curse. It's a legitimate curse.
Yeah.
It's a traveling.
Did the commentators, like when it happened, did they mention
that was the first thing I mentioned was, oh my god, this is just like when Silver broke his leg.
So that's when it gets like crazy, when it's pretty like obvious to more than just fans and stuff.
Yeah. And once people figure out the numerical connections, all the other stuff, it's just so creepy.
Yeah.
And of course Silva was like, oh, I felt really bad about it. Yet it's like, I mean, you kind of passed the leg break on to Hall. He passed the leg break.
It's basically your
fault. Hall with the retirement.
Well, and there was a moment at the end of that retirement fight where Hall had kind of like, you know, in a display of like sportsmanship and reverence, had like knelt down next to Silva, and Silva like very clear, like put his hand. I can't remember if he put his hands on his face or if he put his hands on Hall's shoulders, and was just talking to him. And I'm like, okay, he handed the curse off onto Hall and was like, go get Chris Weidman.
Right.
And I mean, I can't help, not only, you know, it'd be any number, you know, rearranged would be significant, but 1 + 6 + 2 is 9, which is 3 × 3.
Oh man.
It's significant.
It's a creepy curse. Yeah. Nick, what is your number 5?
My number 5, I'm going with the curse that opens Spirited Away, the Miyazaki film where the parents end up, they like bump into this place that, among other things, has a bunch of food set out, and the parents decide that they're just going to start eating the food that doesn't belong to them, and they are gorging. They're gorging themselves, and the daughter walks away for a little bit, and she comes back and sees that they have turned into pigs. And the rest of the movie is her trying to find people who can help her turn them back human. And it's pretty creepy. It's good. It's a good movie.
Creaky.
Yeah, Evie calls it creaky.
Charlie's only seen it a couple times, but the most recent time that we've watched it, she keeps asking why it's happening, and I have run out of
magic
answers for that. is a good fallback.
Most
trying to explain to a 4-year-old why they turned into pigs.
Most things that kids watch has magic in it.
Yeah,
I don't know why. It's just like everything has magic. All the Disney movies have magic. Matilda, how is she lifting that stuff? Well, it's magic.
Yeah. Like, why did Anna and Elsa's parents die?
Magic.
Well, it's easier for children to live in a world where things happen that aren't explained to them. Yeah. And that they can't control.
But they need an explanation.
But what my point is that they are more accepting of magic because the entire world feels unpredictable.
Yeah, as opposed to like,
whereas adults feel like, well, I should be able to control some of these things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kyle, what's your number 4?
My number 4 is a short story that I read a year ago. It's Stephen King, Elevation. I don't know if it's necessarily a curse, but it's basically a short story about this guy who, unlike Thinner, he's not like he's losing weight, but he's not losing mass. He just started weighing himself, and like every day he's losing like pounds and pounds, and eventually he like just. I don't want to. I mean, I could spoil it, I guess, but there's a pretty crazy ending to it all. But yeah, it's weird because it's not horrific. It's more about his relationship with people in his neighborhood and stuff like that. But what he's going through is kind of crazy and feels much like a curse. And it's just really well written. And pretty interesting. It's a short story, which is kind of nice, but interesting. It's kind of crazy how Stephen King can write like 800 page books and then like 50 page books and still tell stories that are just as interesting. But Elevation, it's good. Eva, 4. Yours.
Yep. My number 4, I realized a pattern as I was making this, and I was like, I'm just going to pick all 3 of them. I have several on my list that are from the Golden Girls, and they're all from Sophia. So season 1, episode 24, a tree falls in their backyard from the neighbors, and the neighbor is giving them a hard time about, he's like, well, you're going to, you know, I'm not paying to get this tree taken care of, you know, fell in your yard. And she's like, yeah, but it's your tree. They go back and forth. He calls Sophia and Dorothy Italians. And Sophia says, you're going to take this. And he says, what are you going to do? Make me? And Sophia puts the curse on him. She makes the hand signal and she says, this is the evil eye. Nothing good is going to happen to you until you move that tree. And he comes back in a couple days because everything's wrong. Somebody let the air out of his tires. His clocks in his house are all wrong. Everything's bad for him in his life. And his wife says, don't say anything bad again, or you're going to get another boil on your butt. And he's like, take the curse off. And she's like, okay, fine. And when he leaves, the wife says, I'm really sorry about how my husband's been behaving. That's why I had to do all of those things. And, one of the other women says, it was you. And she goes, yeah, except for the boil. That was a coincidence. But I liked it because it's a combination of, like, are there people who make actions and, you know, try to force something to happen. Like, yes, there are people who believe that they can curse other people. They can influence the world to punish somebody for what they've done. And sometimes it's something way more obvious, like your wife is hiding your golf clubs, like just to punish you that way. And I think it's, I don't know of another TV, a TV episode that actually showed somebody like making the hand motion to curse somebody the way a Sicilian person would. And I don't know if a TV show would do it now.
Nice. Are you excited for the Golden Girls reboot?
I'm interested in it. Yeah. The passage of time is a weird thing. And, you know, the way that we imagine or like perceive women in their 50s or early 60s, which is the age of those women on the original show, I mean, is way different now. Like, people look differently. People like make themselves look much younger now. And so that's going to be interesting. So yeah, I'm into it.
Speaking of TV, I'm going to see just HBO curses. There's always a curse in HBO. The two main ones that I could think of in Rome, when Attia, Caesar's former lover, she, after he remarries, like kind of a, like he gets like an arranged political marriage, she's really upset. And after he comes back from the Gaulish campaign, he kind of spurns her, and she does like the most old school Roman curse, where she's like, she's got the whole, she goes to the temple, she's drawn blood, she's got the hood, she's got like everything. And it's just this like curse where she's scratching out Caesar's family's name, and it's really great. And I actually meant she's cursing Attia. Civilia is cursing Attia. And yeah, just a great Roman Italian curse, and all these just terrible. And it's one of the few times where they like managed to blend in the real life stuff that happens with, there was also a likelihood that people hated them enough to curse them this way. And it leaves it up to you whether or not it happened because it just happened or because of a curse. And then, of course, Game of Thrones curses. There's a couple of them. There's the curse for Cersei, who has, you know, I recently rewatched it, and I've completely forgotten about the Woods Witch that curses her and says all her kids are going to die. Spoiler. And then,
oh yeah, I forgot about
the
that.
Curse of the Rat Cook, who is based on this legend where a guy broke guest right, like he killed someone who was a guest, and he was turned into a giant rat. And then later in the series, one of the main villains perpetrates the red wedding and kills a bunch of people who are his guests. And the same thing happens to him. He's fed his own murdered children. And it's a really good, I mean, Game of Thrones really managed to have like that old Hans Christian Andersen fairy tale feel and the things that would happen. Like, just like really, really like.
Yeah, there was a lot of like eating children.
Cooking kids and doing pie and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And orphan children, I guess, Nick, too. What is it?
Yeah, Khal Drogo's cursed too, isn't
he?
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yep.
And I like that one because it's a trick where the person makes the deal and technically gets what they asked for, but the circumstances of how it's it a happens,
monkey paw.
Yeah. You know, it comes with a higher, you got what you asked for, but you got some other things that came with it.
Yeah.
Nick, what's your number four?
My number four, I'm going with the curse from season 2 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, where Angel, who is like her love interest, is also, or well, he's not also a vampire. He is a vampire. She's the vampire slayer. But what makes Angel different is that he has a soul, and part of him having a soul is a curse because he killed the family of someone and they put a curse on him. And the deal with the curse is, you have a soul now, you're a vampire, so you have to like live with the guilt of all the things you've done. Also, if you ever experience true happiness, i.e. having sex with someone who looks like Sarah Michelle Gellar, you will lose your soul again. And obviously, maybe they do. So that's where season two goes. So that's a very good curse because, like when he like suffers the consequences of it, he doesn't actually like it. It doesn't affect him. It affects those around him because he loses his soul. So he doesn't care. He's back to being like a cool vampire and killing people and whatnot.
Nice.
Yeah. Kyle, what's your number three?
My number three is gonna be It Follows.
I thought about putting that.
I didn't love, but I think I've only watched it once. I think I need to watch it again. But just how they handle the predicament she's in, and how just weird it is, but how it doesn't take very long for the audience to just kind of accept it and just be like, yep, this is it. And then everyone who watches it thinks about how they would handle that if they were in that same situation. I don't know. It's just crazy, crazy ass movie. I feel like I don't want to say too much about it, but yeah, it's definitely one of those movies where you're just like, how do you break this curse? Like, how do you get out of this thing that you're in? And it's crazy. But yeah, It Follows. When did that movie come out? I feel like it's 2016, maybe?
I think even early. Yeah, maybe something like that. It sounds right. Five or 6 years ago.
Yeah. Weird ass movie. Evo would be your number three.
My number three, also Golden Girls, season 4, episode 6, which has a cameo by Quentin Tarantino as an Elvis impersonator. So Sophia's getting married and Dorothy doesn't want her to get married. And Sophia says, I talked to your Aunt Regina back in Sicily, and she says that you have to give me your blessing and give me away at the wedding or else it'll be doomed. And Dorothy says, I'm not doing it. She says, if you don't do it, I'm going to put a curse on you and your life is going to be hell on earth. And Dorothy responds, she says, you can't put a curse on me because the man that you're going to marry is less than 5'7" tall. So it won't work. And there's like a pause. And she says, you're not the only one with Aunt Regina's phone number. And what I feel like, I don't know if everybody has like a witch aunt in their family, like a great aunt who everybody believes is a witch and knows this stuff and would be the one who would come up with a rule like that, who could tell you like, oh yeah, well you have to get, you know, your oldest child or your tallest child to do this or else it's bad, or not if he's under 5'7", it's fine, or something like that. But I, again, thought that was a really amusing detail to this kind of thing, is that, yeah, sometimes curses have very specific loopholes that you can find a way out of.
What is that show about? Is it just old women being old?
No.
Like I don't think I've seen a single second of that show.
Well, yeah.
Gotta get on it, Kyle.
It's a classic.
I will.
Yeah, I think I can relate to that. You know, got some traditional folks in our family that were believed to have some abilities, unexplained abilities. You guys got some traditional folks in your clan. Anybody that had any older folks? Yeah, I feel like that was definitely like a pre-baby boomer. Those are the only ones that, at least in our family, that we had that were like that.
Yeah, not in our direct family. Like some of my mom's, like
I would say, Uncle Matt's wife, Veronica. She definitely probably had powers.
Oh, I don't know.
She was a Trekkie.
We also ex-wife, and we have not seen her for multiple decades. So
yeah, the last time I saw her was a little boy.
Let's see, number three. I'm going to go with one of my favorite kinds of curses is the traveling curse, that you have to basically like to get rid of it, you have to put it on someone else. Mm-hmm. And the best recent one that I've seen is Deerskin. And it's this like random, it's Belgium. Let me make sure. 2019 French comedy horror. And it's just, it's so good. I saw it on HBO, like just like in the middle of the night, one of those like random indie films they play. Kyle, for some reason, I thought when I watched it, I was like, Kyle would really like this movie. Part of it's about him. So basically a guy, like he gets, you know, that he's split up from his wife and he's kind of like wandering around, and he stops at this like guy's house, and it's almost like a Craigslist or Etsy deal where he found something online he's going to buy from this person. And it's a deer skin jacket, and it's like this old cheesy like fringed deer skin jacket, and he's just like really obsessed with how great it looks on him. And he ends up buying like a little camcorder, like a little digital camera, and he's like taking all this footage of himself in the jacket. He develops this obsession where basically he wants to be the only person wearing a jacket. And that goes from him bribing people to get their jackets that he just puts in his trunk, to, of course, I mean, you might have to go to other methods. If you're trying to be the only person with a jacket, you might just start getting rid of people with jackets. And it's just, there's more to it than that. It's so good. It's so great. Huh. And yeah, it involves a curse that it travels.
As far as curses that are tied to like something you wear, the movie Clown, which was just all right, but I think I've talked about it before. But the guy who puts on like the clown costume and makeup and that he can't take off is like, ugh, it's pretty messed up. But yeah,
Nick, what's your number three?
My number three, I'm going with, have you guys seen, I think I've talked about this on the show, like maybe when we did our potato episode, I think it came up, Over the Garden Wall.
It does. Yeah.
It's Elijah Wood.
Yeah, it's Elijah Wood. So it's a cartoon miniseries that Cartoon Network did. That's 10 episodes, and it's about Elijah Wood and his younger brother are basically lost in the woods, and it's about them trying to get home. And it's very like it's a much cleaner. Yeah, it's a much cleaner show than Rick and Morty, but it's that same type of thing where instead of riffing on sci-fi, they're riffing on like folklore, fairy tale type stories. And
it's got Gravity Falls vibes to it.
Yeah, definitely. Is the two of them, but then they come across a bluebird that can talk named Beatrice, who's voiced by Melanie Lynskey, who among other things is from I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore, which we reviewed on the show way back when. And we don't learn for a couple episodes of her that the reason she can talk is because she used to be a person and she threw a rock at a bluebird and it put a curse on her so that her and her entire family become bluebirds. And her kind of goal is to try to turn everyone back into humans, which she has to do by getting a special pair of scissors and cutting their wings off. So Beatrice is, I rewatched this on the plane home from Iceland, actually. Beatrice is a great character. It's a really good show. I would definitely recommend checking it out. The episodes are all short. It's only 10 episodes long, but each episode is like a half length. So you can watch the entire thing in one night. Easy. It's shorter than most movies nowadays. So I would definitely recommend Over the Garden Wall. Kyle, what is your number?
I don't know why you talking about that reminded me of the show on Nickelodeon called 100 Deeds for Eddie McDowd about the guy who got turned into a dog or something and he had to do like good things for people in order to turn back into a person.
Did he make it?
I don't think the show lasted long enough to get all 100 deeds. So I think he's like still a dog. That's not my answer. My number three is kind of a three-way tie between three of the biggest games that came out this year that all have a similar kind of story hook to them, and they're all time loops. Returnal, Deathloop, and 12 Minutes. They're three games that involve characters that are stuck in a time loop that they need to find a way to break free of. I guess it's different than like a regular curse, but the way that they act when they come back makes me feel like it's just like a horrible way to live.
Yeah, that'd be a pretty bad one.
Cursed to me. And as the player, you feel the need to help them like break the loop or whatever, the whatever. And it's good. 12 Minutes was in the game that I super loved, but the concept is cool. And Returnal is probably my favorite game of the year so far. They're just crazy stories, but yeah, time loops in general this year have been pretty big. I guess you could consider them curses, maybe.
Yeah.
Eva, would be your
my number two.
Two?
Yeah.
Yep. Two. Yeah.
Number two, Last Golden Girls One, season 5, episode 23. We've, you know, I've given a couple examples of times where Sophia said she was cursing somebody or said that she could, and it didn't amount to much. However, in this episode, there's a wedding of a young woman whose grandfather spurned Sophia when she was young, left her at the altar, disgraced her. And he went to America. This is when she was still living in Sicily. And she says that she put a curse on him that night that, you know, his life would be miserable. He would never know happiness. And furthermore, that his socks would always fall down inside his shoes. So we're at the wedding. He, you know, tries to kind of apologize. And she says, yeah, well, you know, everything's falling apart at this wedding because of the curse. And he's like, there's no such thing as curses. That's an old country thing. That's for, you know, simple people. And he kind of like laughs. And as he's walking away, he stops, he bends down and pulls his socks up. Right. That's the kind of curse that I could get. Like just like minor persistent annoyances.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the way to get somebody.
Something that's constantly slightly irritating.
Yeah. So what's your number two?
So my number two, I'm going to go with the wrestling curse. There's a lot of curses in wrestling. You mentioned one earlier with Luna Vachon. Two of the best ones, I would say there are, my runner-up would be the Lucha Brothers, who are current Mexican tag team wrestlers, and they're part of like the Lucha tradition. And so they wear masks, and one of the brothers has a cursed mask. So like a lot of times characters will travel, the company owns them, and they can give a new wrestler like an old mask or like revive the character. And everyone who's had his mask and his character has had like a bad ending. It's like died, or I think a couple of them died in the ring or was like murdered outside of it. Yet his whole gimmick is that he's not afraid of anything. So like no fear is his kind of motto, and him not fearing the curse is like the central gimmick, which I thought was good, because there's a lot of cursed characters, and yet flaunting a curse I think was kind of rare. And then there was a character, Papa Shango, who was a good kind of 90s era when we were kids. He was one of the few black wrestlers that was like really prominent. And he was like based on voodoo. He had gone to New Orleans, like really like study the character. It's kind of based on Live and Let Die, like the villain from the Bond movie. And he curses a bunch of people. He curses the Ultimate Warrior. And he's like, and I'll never forget it. The Ultimate Warrior is like in the hospital, full costume. And the doctors are trying to take care of him. And he's throwing up this like really gross, like, it's like orange yellow substance, and it's like really over the top, and because of the curse, the food curse.
He used to make people catch really fire.
People would catch fire. And as a kid, you were like, wow, this is bad news.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're a great character. Oh, and like in real life, the guy's really interesting.
he owns this really famous strip club in Vegas, and it's like a black biker, and was caught up in like some kind of like the 9/11 terrorists were at his bar, and he got like, you know, he was caught up in that whole thing. A lot of other stories. Wrestling shady. Nick, what's your...
Didn't stop him?
Well, he didn't know. I think it was part of, he was part of the sting or something like that. Eventually. Nick, what's your number two?
What is my number two? My number two is the John Carpenter movie, The Fog. And The Fog is about a small town where they're about to celebrate their centennial, but 100 years to that very day, there was like a ship that basically the town's founders tricked into crashing. And the spirits of the people who are aboard that ship have now cursed the town and are coming back in the form of a fog and then like dudes with meat hooks who kill people as they walk through the fog. And at one point, a woman, her son, finds part of the like driftwood basically, but it's actually part of that ship that had crashed, and she sees a message in it, and it changes, and it says six must die. So you know that six people need to die to stop the terror coming over this town. So it's a pretty fun movie. It's not Carpenter's best. It's not as good as like The Thing or They Live, or even like something like Assault on Precinct 13, but I had a good time with it. It's got a couple pretty fun scares, and I would definitely recommend checking out The Fog if you haven't seen it before.
Did he do the music
for it?
I believe he did do the music for it. I know he didn't for The Thing, which is interesting. The Thing really? Is actually Ennio, because I watched that.
It's like, Ennio Morricone.
Yeah, I watched that a couple months ago at this
point. It's very John Carpenter-y.
Thing. Yeah, it does like, seem like his
there's
vibe.
Like no actual music. It's just womp, womp.
Let's womp. See. The Fog music by John Carpenter.
Yeah. Yes,
yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Eva, were you saying the other day that there's no one else is more obvious, like no other composer.
It's more obvious
in the first like
yeah,
John
yeah.
three Carpenter. Seconds, you know it's John Carpenter.
Yeah.
Like
yep. Yeah. And Hart can't argue with that. Kyle, what's your number one?
My number one is Jumanji, the board game. Ooh. Super cursed board game that I was kind of disappointed when the sequels completely like changed courses and added The Rock, even though I've heard that they're pretty decent. I would have loved to see more of like the origins of how the board game came to be. I don't know if they get into that at all in the later ones, but I'm assuming they don't, because I think the newest one is like a video game. But yeah, just a game that once you start playing it, you can't stop playing it until you finish it. And some really terrifying things come out of it. Just a really cool concept. And the fact that it's like, it's not the people that are cursed themselves, but the fact that when they play this game, they're like kind of cursed. It's just a cool spin on this topic, I guess. But yeah, another movie where I immediately put myself in the shoes of the characters and think like, if I could actually handle playing that game myself, I think I would probably tap out once the hunter comes out of the game and tries to shoot me. But yeah, what a crazy.
Yeah, the animals are bad enough. Yeah, I mean, there's a.
Or actually the mosquitoes, too. Screw that. Yeah. Like, mosquitoes the size of birds. Yeah. I quote the flooding scene a lot, pretty much whenever it rains, about
a little rain.
A little water. Rain, but... Yeah, but a lot can kill you. Yeah, great movie. Eva would be your number one.
building on that for a second, there's the other good kind of curse where somebody like opens the book that they shouldn't have opened, or you play the game you weren't supposed to. You become, you take on some amount of knowledge or something else that you're not supposed to have, and it's too much for you to handle.
I think The Ring is sort of similar to that too.
Yeah,
yeah, where they, when you watch the show,
or yeah,
the
movie, you've seen something you shouldn't see, and it breaks you.
That reminds me of that scene in Cabin in the Woods where they're placing their bets on the object that they need to interact with in the basement.
Oh yeah, yeah,
and it's really awesome.
So
it's Witchboard.
Yeah,
Witchboard is another one.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a weird time. So my number one, almost snatched by Sir, but not, got close to it. My number one was also Servilla in Rome, but it was her final curse and her final offering. In the first two curses she laid on people on that show, she was offering the gods that person's body for them to do what they want, or what she was asking for. And she would say like, well, I'll sacrifice to you if this happens, you know, I'll praise you and I'll thank you accordingly. So her last curse, she is camped out in front of Atia's house, like waiting for her to come out. And when she finally confronts her, she says, she summons any god who's listening to curse her, and she says, send her bitterness and despair for all of her life. Let her taste nothing but ashes and iron. Gods of the underworld, all that I have left I give to you in sacrifice, if you will make it so. And then she stabs herself.
It's fucked up.
It's a real curse.
That's the real one.
It kind of, well, I guess piggybacking on that, the another just great curse monologue, The Lighthouse.
Yeah.
Oh, hark.
I don't know if anybody else had that one on their list yet. Jesus Christ.
What if I would have thought of it? That's a great one.
Right. Same here. It just came to me. I'm like, wow, that is probably the other like great curse monologue that I can think of.
It's just,
you know what?
So perfect. One take.
It's what happens when you don't like a guy's lobster.
Nick, at the beginning of the show, did you ask if we believe in curses or just how we feel about them? I feel like curses for me, they fall under the category of like, I don't really think about them very often, but when something very like a big coincidence happens, I'm like, I immediately go to curse. Like, it's, I don't know, it's strange, but yeah, I don't know.
Sir, what's your number one?
So my number one right now, I'm rewatching the 1986 Shaka Zulu South African miniseries, and directed by William C. Farrar. Listeners, I think you can find it on Amazon. Probably one of the best like African historical television shows that there's ever been. So the Zulu South Africa, this is like European contact, yet it's not conflict. It's just mostly about them, and specifically their leader, who's like one of the great generals and military geniuses in history, Shaka, King Shaka. And it tells like the story of his life, and he's basically known for a couple of things, and one of them is revolutionizing how the Zulus and tribes in that region fought. Like, he shortened their spear, turned stabbing from a throwing weapon to a shorter stabbing weapon, and ends up like has some other reforms, expands their kingdom, and there's just this, much like Caesar when he invaded Gaul or Napoleon, there's like a huge conquering of all these people. So the miniseries is like a kind of patriotic like show, and their way of kind of showing like, okay, why was Shaka this bloodthirsty military leader, basically, is that he was cursed by the like magic spear that he created. Like, kind of, it's somewhat magic, and it's like his military innovation as well. And that scene is him like figuring out and creating. And he goes to these like blacksmiths who are kind of part of like a cult of blacksmiths. And he's like, I want you to forge this weapon. And they warn him that the weapon is so powerful that it'll have a soul of its own, that it'll consume everyone in warfare. And he says, that weapon is my soul. And it's just like a really cool kind of scene. And I thought it was interesting as a way of explaining why, a fanciful explanation of why he was so destructive in real life. Yeah. And then it goes along with like cursed weapons, cursed objects. And if you were a black kid millennial, it was probably a movie that your parents had you watch when you were like 6 or 7. Just like great, great, great miniseries. Mm-hmm. Very anti-racist in a lot of different ways. Listeners, check it out. And real quick, it was made during the apartheid boycotts. And that was part of the controversy, was that somebody actually ended up working with the government at that time. It was supposed to be a boycott. Yet, if you weigh the outcome, like, you know, it was early, one of the first times I ever heard of somebody having local, like indigenous film crew and stuff like that. And the actors were well paid. So it was for a good reason. Nick, what is your number one?
My number one is from a Japanese movie from 1965 called Kwaidan, which was directed by, I'm getting the thumbs up from Eva, directed by a guy named Masaki Kobayashi. I've seen 3 of his movies this year, and they are all of the 5-star variety. Anyways, this is an anthology horror movie, unlike the other two, which are more like, one's a samurai movie, one's a like a wartime political movie. This is a horror film that's based on a bunch of short stories by a guy named Lafcadio Hearn.
And
he's from Cincinnati, or well, among other places. He was
a grown man in Cincinnati,
Dublin, and then came to Cincinnati, and then moved to Japan. And this,
I feel like you can only be from one place.
He's from a lot of places. He moved around a lot and then like made his bones in Japan, I think. But so the third of these tales is called Hoichi the Earless, and it is about a blind biwa player, which is sort of like a lute, and he is very talented at playing this instrument. And one day, a samurai comes and says, "Hey, I'd like you to play for my lord." And it turns out that the samurai and the lord and all the people he's playing for are not alive. They're of the spirit realm. And one day, so he does this a few times. And one day, like the people who are living with Hoichi, he lives in like a
monastery almost, right?
Yeah. I just couldn't think of the word. So he, like, some of the people who live there with him follow him, because they're like, he's blind and he keeps going off each night. What is he doing?
And he's like the 12 dancing princesses, right? He's so tired when he comes back because he has to
he's out all night playing all night long.
Yeah.
And they follow him and they finally like track him down, and he's playing like seemingly to just like tombstones. So they drag him back, and the guy finally confesses, like, "Hey, these people have been having me play for them." And part of it is like, he's not allowed to say what he's doing. Like they've banned him from telling anyone what's going on. So when he tells his superiors, they're like, "Oh, like those spirits are going to like kill you. So what we need to do to protect you is we need to write, we need to cover your body in
like magic writing."
Yeah. So it's the text of the Heart Sutra. So they draw all over his entire body, And then when the spirit comes that night, he won't be able to see him. He just has to sit there and be perfectly still. But given the magic writing, they won't see him. The story we see in the opening crawl before the tale even starts is called Hoichi the Earless. So you can guess as to what part of the body that they forgot to draw this on. And I actually have from the Lafcadio Hearn text, the samurai who goes to find him says, "Here's the biwa, but of the biwa player, I see only two ears." So that explains why he did not answer. He had no mouth to answer with, and there is nothing left of him but his ears. Now to my lord, those ears I will take, in proof that the august commands have been obeyed so far as possible. So things don't go well for Hoichi in this moment. But yeah, there's actually like a little bit more to the story after that. And Hoichi ends up sort of okay in like a, I guess in the cosmic sense, he actually ends up becoming quite rich because he's able to like cash in on the tale of interacting with the ghosts and whatnot. But yeah, it's a great movie. I would definitely recommend checking it out. And I think this and the second one are my two favorite ones. It looks incredible.
Was the second one the teacup one?
No, that's the last one. The second one is the one where the guy sees the ghost woman who spares his life, but he has to promise that he'll never mention the encounter.
Mm-hmm.
That one looks incredible. Like, I've never seen sets that look like those sets.
Yeah. But this was my pick. It was a couple Halloweens
ago. I was going to say, I know you've had it on
I think it was Ghosts. Before. And the writing that they, you know, put on him is in this scene. We keep bringing up John Milius tonight, too. The scene in Conan the Barbarian when they're trying to bring him back to life and the demons come and they have to fight them. They put very similar looking writing all over Conan's body to try to camouflage him from these demons that are coming. And wasn't there something about the particular song that he was supposed to be singing? It was like,
the song is like,
it was like the story of them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like like the tale of the battle that they died in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So great, great movie. I have really enjoyed like diving into Kobayashi's work this year, and we'll probably do more. And they're all so different. So I would recommend checking him out. If you have your own curses, you can let us know, but don't curse us for real at our Gmail. onthetropes@gmail.com or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. JDMF will tell you at the end of the show.
I should have pulled a Themo and did the
curse list. Your favorite curses is fuck.
F word's definitely number one curse. Then
I don't want to actually say all the stuff that he says in the I think you should leave sketch, but
oh yeah, in the ghost thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But one of the best sketches from season 2 episode 1 of I Think You Should Leave is all just about swearing. Recommend that show. All right.
It's not even like swearing. It's just saying weird stuff. Anyway. Yeah.
As always, I've been Nick.
Oh no, we got cursed.
I've been Nick.
Eva.
I've been Sir.
And Kyle.
They're carrying us away. We gotta go.
In a world where you've just finished listening to the On the Tropes podcast, only one man can save us from the recaps emerging from tvtropes.org/podcast/onthetropes by sending feedback and suggestions to onthetropes@gmail.com. He was a wild card from facebook.com/onthetropes who played by his own rules. She was the most lethal secret operative twitter.com/onthetropes ever tried to kill. Together, they fight crime. This summer, onthetropes.redbubble.com. Coming to a patreon.com/onthetropes near you.